Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Screen Talk, the weekly podcast that attempts to give you a sense of what the hell is going on in our crazy industry. I'm Ann Thompson.
We don't just attempt. And I'm Ryan Latanzio.
And you're in New York again, thank God. All right. So I'm in Sonoma. I am up at the Sonoma Film Festival, and this has become, I came here last year. It's a film festival that happens to be right after the Oscars, so it's a perfect way to unwind and go to some wine tastings. But they actually have some films that I'm going to look at. They have the Anita Pallenberg doc. They have the Ken Loach movie, The Old Oak, which is opening soon. They have Wicked Little Letters with Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley, which is opening soon. So there's a lot of stuff to catch up on in between wine tastings.
And you said John Cameron Mitchell's there doing something kind of interesting.
Yes, so John Cooper, the ex director of the Sundance Film Festival, was here last year, along with the current director, Eugene Hernandez, and they're both back. And I'm going to be on a, I'm going to be on a panel. So what's fun, what's fun for me is that they invite Carl Spence, is the director of this festival, who's been working with different film festivals like Seattle for a really long time. He and Miami, you know, I know him well. He invites all these people from the industry to be on the various panels and do moderating and Q&As and everything. And it's fun to hang out with people I've known for years.
What's the panel that you're on?
The future of the industry, you know.
Right. Yeah, it's like, we don't fucking know.
Yeah, we can try. I'm not going to be very helpful. I'm not going to have much to offer. I'm sort of curious about what other people think too. You know, how do you get younger audiences in? That's the trick. You know, that's the secret to success. Without just dumping all the movies that we care about that are appealing to older audiences. So that's a question. So in the meantime, we've been looking at the new news from Cannes. Could tell us about it, Ryan.
Yes, which is that following with the tradition of Mad Max Fury Road in 2015, Furiosa will be premiering out of competition at this year's Cannes Film Festival.
May 15th. I will be there and you will be there and we will have fun.
We will all be there. And
the trailer is awesome. The trailers have been good. Do you
agree? I have some thoughts about the trailer. The trailer is a trailer, and we know the movie isn't done, so I can't purport that it all is, you know, the finished product. A couple of takeaways from the trailer. We know Anya Taylor-Joy didn't actually shave her head because due to scheduling, she really wanted to do this, but George Miller wouldn't let her. She also has other projects. I mean, she's probably going to be another Dune movie, but she couldn't shave her head due to scheduling reasons.
It looks like she shaves her head.
Yes, so she's a very convincing bald cap of some sort. So that's very exciting. We'll see her at Cannes with a full head of hair, potentially. The trailer, it's interesting. Fury Road was sort of pioneering in its way for how and you know this movie very well. You talked to George Miller many times. For its level of practical effects. And I feel like based on this trailer, I'm seeing a lot of CGI, maybe more, or I'm seeing the seams of the CGI perhaps more than I did with Fury Road. Again, it's just a trailer, but this trailer looked a bit more to me in sort of the garish style of perhaps 3,000 Years of Longing, George Miller's previous movie that was a huge bomb, but still an interesting failure.
He earned the chance to do his crazy Tilda Swinton, Idris Elba, genie love story.
So what did you think about the trailer?
The deal with these movies, any sequels like this, is that you'd want there to be enough that's new. I mean, this is the way Denis Villeneuve talked about Dune 2, right? he did do it. He managed to make enough new, fresh, crazy stuff in there that wasn't so that the, what was left of the original wasn't too familiar. That's the deal. You don't want to, what reason is it really that all these movies haven't done so well, right? The Indiana Jones and the Mission Impossibles, you know, they're pretty good movies. Why did they fail? They failed in relation to how much they cost, of course. That's really the problem. But it's because they didn't bring you enough that was new. It had to be, these were old, familiar clothes that didn't look fresh. And so that's the issue. There's a list of the 20 movies that are coming up, the top 20, and that doesn't even cover the whole list of sequels that are coming this year. I mean, it's unbelievable. This one I have high hopes for, but the trailer gives you a lot of those stunts. Maybe this is part of what you're saying. They look familiar, don't they?
They do.
It's the same. It's somebody, you know, a Mad Max rig. We saw a lot of Mad Max rigs. Now we have Anya Taylor-Joy and we love her and she could probably do the job. This is like the prequel. This is the origin story of Furiosa, if you like. So I'm interested in that. But they didn't show us much of that.
No.
There must be a lot of her with the young Furiosa before she grows up.
And your Paul Mescal is my Anya Taylor-Joy. I've got to remember that it's Anya.
That's right. She's very, yeah, very
but
sensitive
you got,
about
you,
that.
Yeah, and you got,
I interviewed
you got it
her
right.
Once. You
did it right. I met her one time during The Witch at Sundance, and I feel really bad. I actually kind of hung out with her a little bit, and she accidentally left her press badge with me, and she messaged me to mail it to her, and I never did because I'm so bad with snail mail. So I don't know where it is now. So sorry, Anya, I have lost your press badge from Sundance. But anyway, the other thing I will say about that Furiosa that will work to its advantage that I would say didn't for something. Okay, so like Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning. I didn't see part one. I didn't see the Mission Impossible before that, whatever the hell that was even. I don't even remember. Fallout, was it Fallout? Whatever preceded, who knows? Whatever preceded Red Reckoning part one, I sat down for this movie. I really had no idea what was going on from the first frame. And if you are not on the train with these movies, like you're never getting on it. You know what I mean? And this is similarly how I felt with the Marvels. This is in a different universe, but I couldn't access it. And whereas at least with Furiosa being a prequel, it is tabula rasa.
Anyone can come in
and you can start from scratch with the world even.
But Dune is an example of them doing it right. I mean, that movie has grossed over $512 million around the world. That just makes me happy, you know? Yes, they spent $200 on it, and so it isn't as impressive as all that. They needed to make this much money, but they gave us plenty to play with and to ingest. And to, you know, Austin Butler was worth the price of admission alone. So.
And it's a true part two, you know, in the vein of Empire Strikes Back or something where it trusts you to come to the table with remembering the first movie in a way where maybe there's some money lost there. I don't know, by trying to just bring new people in. But it is a true part two in that sense.
Well, no, they obviously did bring more people in. So are they going to bring, do you want to run through some of the one, are there certain, well, let me ask you this. Are there sequels coming up that you actually are looking forward to?
Well, the one that I am looking, not many. You said there's 20. There's probably two.
There's more than 20.
I'm
there's,
excited
no, no,
about.
No. That's just the ones you really know of. There's a longer list.
The one that I am looking forward to actually is Alien Romulus, which is coming out August 16th. There's a couple new Alien projects going on because Noah Hawley is also working on this FX show. But this movie, which is set between the events of the first Ridley Scott movie, Alien, from 1979, and the James Cameron sequel, Aliens, which these movies, you know, they directly follow one another, but still, you can access Aliens without having seen Alien necessarily.
Sure.
This one takes place between
those. Terrific movies. Yeah. Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
And apparently, both Ridley Scott and Cameron have signed off on this and said it's
good. Yes. Yeah, and really, Scott Free Productions has its imprimatur on it. And it's directed by Fede Alvarez, who did a really great kind of home invasion sort of movie a few years ago called Don't Breathe.
Yes, it was excellent.
Which is excellent. And this stars Kaylee Spaney, who is wonderful in Priscilla. I always look forward to these movies because you don't have to really know anything. This is set in the universe of Alien, but it's a different space station. It's not the Nostromo, which is the one that we knew from the Ridley Scott
Sigourney
movie.
Weaver. Yeah.
No Sigourney Weaver. So
they've got a brand new cast.
Yeah, so you can come into it and it doesn't feel like a slog in the way that what I'm describing, this phenomenon I thought with Dead Reckoning was of like, I don't know what's going on here. This really is not, this isn't like that because it's sort of its own satellite movie adjacent to the others.
So I'm looking forward to that too, totally, 100%. And if Cameron says it's good and Ridley says, I'm in, you know. The one that's, there's several that are basically going back to the first movie and bringing the cast back again, much older. So Beetlejuice is one of those. I mean, that original movie was in like 1988 or something, you know? And so yes, they're going to add Jenna Ortega, you know,
Justin Theroux
and Monica Bellucci, but Catherine O'Hara's in it and Michael Keaton's in it.
And Winona Ryder.
I'm willing. I'm open.
The one thing I just wanted to say about Beetlejuice as it's called, is that it is directed by Tim Burton, and he has said that he's using a lot of stop motion, which, you know, the original Beetlejuice was a pioneer of that. You know, I'm sure you might remember these sequences that take place in the underworld that involve a lot of like stop, almost sort
That's
of claymation
right.
kind of motion. So he's really returning to that handcrafted style of filmmaking that he says has been really energizing for him. And if you think about his output of the recent times.
No, this is good for him. I like this.
Yeah, it is. It is.
No, but I liked what he did with the Jenna Ortega series, which I thought was really well done. So Gladiator 2, the deal there is that you're taking a character from the original who was young and you're bringing him back and continuing the story with him. And that's played by Paul Mescal. And so so I'm looking forward to that. I think, you know, with all the different players back on the case, I think that could be really good. You know, Ridley again. Yeah.
I think that this movie will be huge when you look at the cast. Pedro Pascal, I mean, he can open a movie because he's huge on TV.
He's a star
he's
now.
Got Denzel. Yeah. And there's some other people in the cast that I'm excited about. Fred Heschinger, who, if you watch the first season of White Lotus, he's the kid who at the end stays behind at the resort
guy.
with the locals. Right. Yeah, I have a little crush on him. He's also in that. He's in that June Squibb movie, Thelma, that was at Sundance that he was very good in. And Derek Jacobi is in this one. It's super fun.
We like him. Yeah,
I love
that'll
him. Be fun. But my question about it is that Gladiator won all these Oscars in 2001. I'm trying to remember what it even beat out, but
it beat out Traffic.
Beat out Traffic, which won Best Director. So that this was,
and I
Ridley
think
Scott,
it also may have beat out Crouching Tiger. Is that possible?
Yes,
yeah.
That's right. So it was a stacked year, and this with Crouching Tiger, maybe with Traffic, those are movies I think people talk about more now. I don't feel like Gladiator is
no,
a
people
movie
love
that
Gladiator. Gladiator is still extant. People talk about it. People still watch Gladiator. It is an action movie. It is incredibly satisfying. It was really well done. You think it's one that your generation no longer talks about?
Not my generation. No, I've never talked about it. But my dad, who is in his early 60s, he loves Gladiator. And he used, you know, back at the advent of DTS sound, when he had his whole like sound system set up, I was forced to watch Gladiator so many times on DVD when I was like 11 or 12. So I know it very well. You know, it's close to my heart in a weird way, even if I haven't watched it in, you know, 20 years.
So the other one that does this thing where they bring back the older cast is Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, right? That's the name of it. And
yes.
It's, you know, so you've got Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd and all this stuff. So this one I'm hesitant about. I'm not super, they don't have a good track record, these Ghostbusters sequels. So I'm
no.
I'm going to hold back and I hope it's better.
This will, you know, this is, I know this is my tagline on this podcast, but I will never see Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. It's never going to happen. Even though Carrie Coon, I love Carrie Coon. And I really, we were supposed to get interviews with her actually for IndieWire, but she is now in the White Lotus. So she couldn't participate in press conveniently. Maybe, I don't know. I really want to know why. I want to know why. Maybe she needs money for her 10,000 DVD collection with Tracy Letts that she has to maintain.
That was a funny story. Yeah. She got some laughs and some viral videos out of that.
I'm sort of confused about the existence of this Frozen Empire one, but then I looked back at Afterlife from 2021, and I guess it, and for a 2021 movie, it did, for Sony, it did pretty well. It was a budget of 75.
Do you have a number?
Yeah, and the box office was 204 million.
And what was the budget?
75, and it
was a
fall 2020 release, so that's not bad. Okay. And I guess it was enough to embolden them for this other movie that this time isn't directed by Jason Reitman, who's a co-writer with this guy Gil Kenan, but you know that Jason Reitman must have been shadow directing this movie in some way.
Well, he's trying to respect his father's legacy, obviously. Yeah. So the one I'm really looking forward to, we talked about this before, is Twisters. That trailer at the Super Bowl just knocked my socks off. And Glenn Powell is on a roll, no question. It just looked fantastic. It looked funny. It looked like the action was extraordinary. It looks like the visual effects have caught up with where we are now and they can really do some fun things.
Yeah, it has a great cast. It's definitely not the pivot I would have expected from Lee Isaac Chung after Minari, but
I know
it's
that's why I'm looking forward to it. The trailer looked good. It did. He's a smart guy, and he's not going to want to fail. He's going to want to make a commercial movie. If that's what he set out to do, that's what he's going to do.
There's a good supporting cast of a lot of IndieWire kind of friendly people that we know: Anthony Ramos, Brandon Perea from Nope. This guy, who I'm sure you like, Daryl McCormick from Good Luck to You.
You know I do.
Grand. You know yeah. I do. Uh-huh. And I know why. And Sasha Lane also, who we like from a lot of things, but including American Honey. And Kiernan Shipka, who has managed to forge her own quite a successful path after Mad Men, where she played Sally Draper.
Good for her. Yeah. So there's another one that I'm a little iffy on, and we'll see how it turns out. Deadpool and Wolverine. Now this is a case where Ryan Reynolds can wear out his welcome really quickly, but having the two of them go against each other, Wolverine and Deadpool, I like that. And Hugh Jackman is obviously a worthy adversary in that universe. So I'm curious to see how that turns out. And Sean Levy knows what he's doing also. He's a crowd pleaser director.
He does. And these Deadpool movies tend to be more irreverent and sort of cheeky and self-reflexive, but not in a smarmy way that the other Marvel movies are. And there's humor and there's stuff there for adults in the way that we don't see necessarily.
They're witty. There's dense dialogue. So the other one is Joker, Folie à Deux, you know, where we've got Todd Phillips returning and Joaquin Phoenix and the addition, of course, of Lady Gaga. So we shall see if it's a Folie à Deux or whether it turns out to be good. I liked the first Joker. There's no question that the first Joker was a successful movie.
I remember seeing it with you. Yeah, I'm curious to watch, to see the mainstream try and pronounce Folie à Deux, which is one of my favorite expressions that I use a lot in my writing. And now I feel like now it's been, not, it's not
been
that I had,
away from
it's
you.
Been taken away. It's gone. I don't have it anymore.
Well, what do you think though? Is it going to be good? What's your feeling?
I can't see how it could not be good. I mean, even I have to say that even Lady Gaga, in what will be an insufferable press tour with her, probably talking about how she lived in a straitjacket for 6 months to be in character for this Harley Quinn person. Even with House of Gucci, we saw how talented she was there in a way where she didn't quite elevate the schlocky material, but almost. I don't know that she would put her hands on something that was bad. And for me, Joker is not a movie that's really close to my heart. but I respected the craft of it and what it was trying to do. And I also think Joaquin Phoenix, like, he goes for broke so far off the cliff every time in this way that I can't imagine, even if it fails somehow, it will not be interesting.
All right. So another one that's coming up is Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Now, I'm in on these. I really like these. But I looked at the trailer for this one, and I have to say it looked like the same old, same old. They're in the woods, they're fighting, there's war, there's apes on horseback. You know, so they're going to have to show me something a little bit new, some new hook for it.
These ones I have trouble distinguishing, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, no, they're well done. They're really beautifully made. But did you have any other ones?
No, that about covered it. I mean, as of this writing, they're announcing a Boondock Saints sequel. So I guess I'm going to have to go watch that movie that I know only from college dorm room posters and people like going to boys' houses for sleepovers and looking at their VHS collection when I was trying to be straight. But other than that, no, I mean, there. And by the time this podcast goes up, there'll be another one announced. It's a constant rolling.
No, it's endless. There's Bad Boys 4 and Despicable Me 4 and Kung Fu Panda 4, which didn't do well compared to the prior ones, I have to say.
I thought it did well initially. It had a strong opening because there hasn't been another animated family movie really to fill the void in so far this year.
It's, I guess, not
maybe
on the
Wonka
scale of,
sort of filled
maybe,
that.
Maybe it'll catch up. And then there's Inside Out 2. So there's, you know, Sonic the Hedgehog 3. This is what we're dealing with. Venom, a new Venom, Venom 3. This is the world that we live in. This is what they want to spend their money. The Karate Kid is coming back with Jackie Chan and Ralph Macchio. That's another one where you've got the original cast coming back. Or not the original, the remake cast.
Yeah, those are the ones that I question sometimes. Because that movie, Karate Kid, that is not a franchise that my generation talks about. I think maybe the generation just slightly above me, or people just slightly older than me, maybe by like 10 years, are really into it. So I wonder, I guess they're trying to engender a sort of a new audience for these movies, as well as connect the bridge to the old ones. I don't know. That's one that I don't quite understand, because I'm not feeling a lot of fervor for Karate Kid anymore in recent years.
Yeah, we'll have to see. No, they all have to prove themselves and give people a reason to go see them. So how you have been writing about this movie, Immaculate, which I missed. It was at South By. It had a kind of a big opening there with Sydney Sweeney. So how is the you know, we talked about Glenn Powell and anyone but you, and she came out ahead there, and she's had a good solid career since she first started in Euphoria with The White Lotus and Reality. But what's her stardom quotient in this movie?
I think this movie is certainly moving the needle in her stardom quotient in a way certainly that Madame Web didn't. It's interesting. She said some things about Madame Web in recent press. What she said about Madame Web is that, yeah, it was a flop. It's not really her fault. She did it so that she could broker these formative relationships at Sony that helped get Anyone But You financed. So she's a savvy business person in that way. As far as the performer on screen, she is an excellent sort of pregnant final girl in Immaculate as this novice nun at a Roman convent who suddenly has an immaculate conception. And then she's sort of emblemized as a symbol of purity at the convent, where this is a horror movie, a Neon release out Friday. Obviously, many nefarious things are going on. The first half of the movie, it relies a lot on jump scares rather than storytelling. And I think that it stumbles in the first half. But what people are going to want, that people, you need to stay for the ending. The last 30 minutes goes into almost a mother or even Antichrist level of female unraveling. And then she becomes this pregnant final girl. And there is shocking, brutal violence that's almost on the level of a slasher movie. And there are a few scenes at the end that it's just, you will never forget this ending. And she completely goes for it all of the way. And for that, I think she's really going to be remembered for this movie. And I think this movie, a lot of her audience
is
Gen Z.
Is it going to do business when you say it's going to be remembered?
I think that it will. I think it's going to do well with her audience. She has, I mean, she's got a big Gen Z audience from Euphoria. And this movie, it helps if you don't really know your horror references. It's like we've seen all these Catholic terror movies, so it's very familiar to us. And that
people
doesn't
keep referencing
help.
The Nun. Yeah.
Yes, it does. That doesn't help when you already know the stakes here. But for younger audiences that aren't familiar with that iconography, I think they'll really respond to this movie. It's definitely a movie that demands to be seen in a theater, especially for these last 30 minutes that I'm going to say are a must-see. It's just unfortunate the preceding hour.
You haven't sold me, Ryan.
No, I don't think it's for you. I don't.
No. But I like Nun movies, you know I have a thing for Nun movies, but not for Nun horror movies.
No, you do love... Well, you like Black Narcissus, which this does... It does reference this. I would say the production design, it's very expensive looking, by the way. And the budget is in the single, or the budget was in definitely in the seven figures on this one, but it looks, you know, it looks polished. And obviously where they shot it on location in Rome, they're definitely going for a Powell and Pressburger sort of look over, say, The Nun, when we're talking about convents and horror movies.
All right. Well, no, you wrote about it and you made me think, no, it could be stylish. It could be well-directed, but I don't know. We'll see. I can take gruesome. I can do it. I'm tough.
Yeah. You should check it out, but you see it when it's available at home in a month.
All right. We are going to have on the podcast, Morgan Neville, the head of Tremolo Productions, who is an Oscar-winning documentary filmmaker. He did that great movie 20 Feet from Stardom, and then he directed that great Fred Rogers movie Won't You Be My Neighbor, which didn't get nominated, which was
famously not nominated.
Yeah, a travesty. And he hasn't been nominated since, you know, which is very much in the tradition of all these great, you know, Alex Gibney could complain, a lot of people could complain that they don't get arrested again after they've won the Oscar. So we'll talk to him. He has a lot of good projects, but the one we're going to be talking about the most is the new Steve Martin two-parter on Apple, which is called Steve.
Which I'll be catching up on tonight.
See you soon.